hi, everybody. I'm moving right along. This is our second initiation compilation. Maybe not entirely complete, but, you know, with enough indications to let us know what this initiation is and how it may be playing out in our life. I'm here on the 14th of June, 2018. This is our Temple of Silence with various, as I say, swords on the wall due to the proclivities of my first-ray wife, Tuya. Anyway, so maybe I could say I'm under the gun, or maybe I should say I'm under the sword in order to accomplish some of the things that have to be done. Yeah. Okay. So we had reached item number 6. There's, you know, probably 32 pages of this, and we've done 4 pages, and then there are other references as well. And our job is to piece all this together into a coherent, unified relationship so that, in a way, the action of Mercury becomes the realization of Jupiter. Jupiter gives us that wholeness of vision, which can occur after Mercury brings all things into proper relation, as would be seen on the Buddhic plane under the influence of pure reason, with which Mercury is much associated. So here we are. This next reference is from Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, page 66 and 67. The astral turmoil of the world influences the disciple preparing for the second initiation. Well, you know, we have some very nice planets, unless you really look at them physically. They're beautiful, but, you know, conditions exist on them that would not be suitable for the physical vehicle of a man, a human being. And they are Venus and Jupiter and Neptune. He talks about that in 2 different places, the connections of these planets. But also, there's a lot of Mars in this initiation and the overcoming of it. There's a lot of Pluto cleansing the astral body. There's a lot of Vulcan beginning to bring in the will to control the astral body. And so, you know, with all these energy streams, there's, and also pouring into the astral body of humanity, there's going to be a lot of turmoil, and we're certainly witnessing that now. And that turmoil is part of the general glamorous situation in which we are living presently, and aided and abetted by some who are deeply immersed in glamour and yet have positions of power. We have to find our way into the calmer, safer, more tranquil waters, influenced by the power of love, under the second ray, not only the sixth ray. The glamour induced upon the astral plane as the result of the 3 intermingling and inflowing streams of energy. Well, there are, you know, there's a threeness in Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. But I think he may be talking about other things here as well. The energies set in motion by the uprising cry, or shall we call it an inchoate invocation of humanity itself, which inevitably shapes and molds astral substance. We have our wishes. We prefer that things would be better and in different form. Wishes and aspirations. Hopefully for better compliance of life to our desires, you know, and oftentimes they're low desires, but the desire forms do take shape upon the astral plane according to the uprising cry. And notice the word cry, it's oftentimes associated with tears and with the solar plexus, and hence with the Piscean civilization. Pisces rules tears and the tear glands and ducts. So many people are unhappy, and justifiably so, because the needs for a reasonable life are not being met. And then the new inflowing spiritual energies, which the planetary logos is, which the planetary logos is steadily bringing to bear upon human life and upon all forms of physical existence. And, you know, these include shambolic energies, really. So, shambolic energies are included here, and we saw a little bit earlier that diagram of the three past, present, and future relations between Shambhala hierarchy and humanity, and these must traverse and cut across the astral plane in reaching the physical plane. Remember, it's going to be a very spiritually physical age, this Aquarian age. It's going to involve the etheric body, very much so, because of the seventh ray that is connected with this age of Aquarius, at this time at least. And once you involve the physical, the etheric plane, you're dealing with precipitation onto the physical plane. So, you know, we're going to have an age in which much of value hopefully precipitates physically, and that will include many fifth ray precipitations involving what science can bring us of more advanced possibilities, which will bring in the age of leisure and self-cultivation, we are told. And the retreating forces of evil, which are endeavoring to make a last desperate stand upon the astral plane. I'd say right now, this year is 2018, we're in the middle of such a last and desperate stand. And the glamour-producing tendencies of relatively personal and undeveloped human beings are being stimulated. And that's affecting the way nations operate within themselves and in relation to each other. It's not very intelligent, it's not very spiritual, it's very selfish. So what do we have here? The humanity's cry uprising, asking for a better compliance to their wishes and desires, and the new inflowing spiritual energies, which are from Aquarius and of Shambhala, and also of the nature of hierarchy and the soul of the planet, basically, and the retreating forces of evil, which are, but notice that word, retreating. And they seem to be retreating with the sixth ray. The number six is a very Martian number to a certain extent, and the 666 represents the three lower elemental vehicles and their tendencies. And so to associate evil with the 666 and with Mars is a reasonable association. The power of Mars, we are told, ever since, was it 1946, has been has reached its high point of the ability to cause trouble and friction, and it's subsiding. But in the larger planetary scale, these subsidences take a while, and we're still very much in this period of the outgoing sixth ray and Piscean energies, and pretty much during the 21st century, they will be retreating, and right now they're hoping for some kind of impact, because humanity is very vulnerable at this time. So, the retreating force of evil, these are the three. These three types of force, when brought into relation with each other, are producing an unparalleled vortex of energy. It's not easy to live now. It's filled with opportunity, of course, but it's emotionally stressful. So many more people are committing suicide now. The statistics are up. They see no hope. The ageless wisdom could save their lives if they could see and understand and reason and believe, but it's not reaching them the way it could and should. So those of us who adhere to the value of the Ageless Wisdom have a big job to do in educating humanity. It's a big educational propaganda work, propagate the ideas associated with the Ageless Wisdom. So an unparalleled vortex of force of which all disciples are necessarily aware, particularly those, and they are a large number, I suppose, in the hundreds of thousands, who are preparing for the second initiation, the control of the astral body, or at least a reasonable degree of control. Now, exactly what that is, maybe the masters can measure, but the astral body cannot run the show, you know. All disciples working among their fellow men are brought into contact with this astral whirlpool, and we have to keep knowledgeable about it, but not swept, disidentified from it, not swept off our feet by all the stuff that tends to come at us and which we ourselves may be generating, unfortunately, through unconquered areas of our astral reactivity. But when we find ourselves really being reactive, we will know that there is a problem, and we have to bring the astral reactions into the proper degree of tranquility. I wish I could remember what page in the Rays and Initiations. I go on hunts here, and please forgive me as I do this, but the Alice Bailey books, and it's the Rays and Initiations, and there is a page where we talk about the of the personality and conquer. Maybe the word is not conquer, and it's not subdue the ancient authority. That's it. Ancient authority. That's it. And the page here is page 685 and 686. And this is a wonderful section, and it shows the different kinds of freedom which are progressively relating to the initiate's experience. And of course, I did this particular book, the last part of it, as a video, and I reached a section where I discussed this. And but here for the second degree, the baptism, freedom from the control of the emotional nature and the selfish sensitivity of the lower self. And then when we reach the third degree, freedom from the ancient authority of the threefold personality, marking a climaxing moment in the history of all initiates actually becoming the initiates. So try to remember these pages. They're very important. You know, that's part of being able to access the information you need to have these things in your mind. Page numbers. You know, I once had a conversation with a guy where all we did was exchange page numbers, but we knew what we were talking about, I think. So 685 and 686. Okay. Well, all right. So we are in, even now, a very disturbing situation. And can we remain uncontaminated by it? Can we avoid being swept by glamour and thereby rendered far less useful than otherwise might be the case? I'm remembering that as DK was forming his groups of nine, it's the group regarding glamour, the observers of reality and so forth, that had maybe the most difficulty, and which confronted situations where they were very vulnerable. So many of them had and required the sixth ray, and he did have some stabilizing influences in there, but this group fell prey to these forces. Eventually, you know, he had to discontinue this experiment with the groups of nine and move on to a group of 24 in 1939 and 1940, the new reorganized seed group. Now, here's some information, also from Dinah, too. He's talking about the different points in the solar plexus, and they are related to the second initiation, and the higher point has to be activated here. The lower point is more Martian, and the higher point is more Neptunian and uplifting. The relation between the two points within the solar plexus itself, these are symbolic also of personality-soul relationships. So in this case, well, we do know that every vehicle, maybe except the etheric vehicle, in the personality, including the entire personality vehicle, is ruled by Mars, and maybe Neptune has a lot to do with the uplifting soul. So does Jupiter, so does Mercury, so does Venus. There are ways to take the various planets and apply them either to the lower or higher aspects of our nature. One point is awakened, that's the lower point, right? As to the lower life of man, it rules lower desire or maybe horizontal desire. It's Martian. And the other point is awakening, as in the case of the aspirant. So think of Neptune and the sixth ray. There is this aspiring, uplifting possibility. You know, Neptune leads often a pretty vertical life. It doesn't have roots. It rules rootlessness, but it does rise, or it induces the rising. The other point is awakening, you know. Excuse me if I look half light and half dark. Maybe that's the case with most of us. Anyway, you know, the sun is pouring in from one angle, and I can't get enough light on the other side to make me look quite human here. The other point is awakening, as is the case of the aspirant, or is totally awakened, as is the case of the pledged disciple prior to the second initiation. So, you know, what does it say? We have to be a pledged, okay, well, a pledged disciple prior to the second initiation. We can even be a pledged initiate. There's that category as well. We can be an accepted disciple and still be what he calls accepted and pledged. I guess we shouldn't obsess too much about what our status may be, but simply try to live the life of service as best may be possible according to our capabilities and according to the needs which DK has presented. Now, you know, some of those needs are pretty straightforward. The triangle's work must go on, and we must prepare men's minds and hearts for the reappearance of the Christ, and we must contribute generously to the hierarchical work and help others see the way through to contributing generously, you know, the meditation attracting money for hierarchical purposes. We have to dissipate glamour in our own lives, and if we succeed in that somewhat in the life of humanity, and certainly in our own nation, we have to invoke the soul and help to bring the causal body of our particular nation into the condition where the hierarchical influence can be more prominent. And you may recognize that these are the very themes of the ASK invocatory program. Ask and it shall be answered, and seek and you shall find, and knock and it shall be opened unto you. So we continue to, he and I, to offer this kind of program through broadcasts and webinars, and hopefully you will be able to take advantage of those presentations, and that you will prioritize your life as we have attempted to do ours, so that the main thing is to do the hierarchical work in a practical manner as best you can. My little plug is over. I guess it's kind of a inducement to join us. So anyway, as disciples in training and pledged, we've made the promise, many of us, both of those centers, however anatomically they may be located, that may come later, vortices of energy, are awakened, totally awakened if we are the pledged disciples. So let's make sure that we make our promise. It's pretty hard to think about being an accepted disciple unless we have made the pledge, becoming accepting disciples, and then pledged disciples, and then accepted disciples. All right, here's another. Going along, you know, I have the leisure to discuss these things in a manner that is not rushed, hopefully. Here we have a decentralized attitude towards personality reactions. They do occur, of course. Love of humanity, they're both necessary for preparation for the first and second initiations. Here I would caution you, and call attention to my earlier statement that all stimulation of the solar plexus and all focus upon that center carries with it definite danger. Well, we see it happening all the time, and people are just swept away by those currents, and they don't realize that they are being overcome by glamour, by untruth, by the veiling of reality. So if we concentrate on the solar plexus center, usually when he has us include the solar plexus center, there are other centers involved. We're not just trying to stimulate our psychic capacity, because it's going to open up at first into lower psychism, and we may not be able to handle it. We'll be thrown back into the type of consciousness of Atlantean days, and we don't want that. We're on our way to the fulfillment of Aryan soul consciousness. So solar plexus and all focus upon that center carries with it certain danger, and disciples are enjoined to exercise wise control over the emotional nature. You know, if we were to, this is one page, okay, but suppose we're going to look over here at a treatise on white magic, and this time I think I know the page number. It's 423, and hopefully I'm correct, or correct enough. Oh, no, it's 4, I'm not correct. It's 473. And control the body of the motion, of emotion. For the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life engulf the swimmer, shut out the sun, the soul, right, and render all plans futile. These 15 counsels beginning on 473 are very important, worth memorizing, worth holding in our consciousness. It is the transition from emotional and personal life into soul life, and it can make a master of us if we learn how really to understand and obey. So wise control over the emotional nature, so that the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life will not engulf us, the swimmer, will not shut out the sun of our life, the soul, and will not render our attempts to fulfill the divine plan futile. A decentralized attitude, you know, getting off the center of our own stage as regards personality reactions, and a steady deepening of the love of humanity will safeguard disciples at this stage, the stage of seeking to fit themselves for the first or second initiation. So there's no question about what is required. Now, decentralization, you know, we're not identifying with the little ego in the middle of our field of consciousness. We are the observer. The ultimate observer here is the monad and its expression, the soul and the soul in incarnation in the lower three worlds. That is the observer. We are the observer, and we have to make sure that, you know, like in those old stories, we don't hit that tar baby in such a way that our hands get stuck, you know, or our feet or whatever. It's made out of tar, that personality, and it can grip us and render our efforts futile. So sometimes, I think it was the Sagittarius, he says, basically look on at the personality as if whatever's going on there was happening to someone else, and study it scientifically and with detachment. There's where the fifth ray, I think, comes into play and is useful. So many of us are seeking to fit ourselves for the first or second initiation. You know, we always overestimate ourselves. I sometimes joke, you know, always subtract one, and in certain cases subtract two initiations if you want to figure out where you really stand. It's, you know, he tells us that the average disciple is more consciously conceited than should be the case, inflates his status, and then begins to defend that status in the eyes of others, and the whole thing becomes very, very personal. So can we be decentralized? Can we look on from another position at the personality as if it was really something else, someone else, an instrument, and not really us at all, because we are in the position of the observer? Can we do that? I sometimes make the picture of myself, my outer self, very small, so that I get the sense of the larger observer and the tiny and distant personality, and I get the sense of being quite detached from what I or others might normally identify with, namely the personality. Okay, so a decentralized attitude is needed, and a steadily deepening love of humanity, as he said before, you know. And he says that's one of our main faults. We don't really, really love humanity. At least, you know, he says we love those we're associated with and our work and maybe certain teachers in certain parts of the plan, but the real need, the love of humanity, is not present. So it seems a simple thing, doesn't it? But we have to learn to cultivate that. And every day, I suppose, we should be asking ourselves, you know, as we go out in the world and we see perfect strangers, you know, nobody's really a stranger, it's all a familiar, identical thing, but do we love? You know, and regardless of the personality presentation, do I love you simply because you breathe? You know, whether animal, plant, mineral, human being, angel, God, all breathing things. Do I love all breathing things? And if I do, why? Okay, going on. Another Dyna II reference. The relationship between meditation one and the second initiation. Well, there's where lifting our the solar plexus energy upward. And we're using the mantra of unification, the sons of men are one. And those of you also who know with certainty that you are being specifically prepared for the second initiation, and he did tell some people that they were, you know, there's some fairly famous examples there, and some of it never really saw the light of the day in print. But for others, preparation for the second initiation was definitely mentioned. Those of you who are being prepared for this initiation would do well to follow this meditation for 1 week in each month of the year. And so that's, you know, he basically told us that these six or even seven meditations in the Dyna II book would stand us in good stead for the rest of our lives, even though he did discontinue the teaching to that group. You know, it was planned as long as Alice Bailey was in the body and would be a reliable amanuensis, and if he made other plans, it's difficult to know, but because there would be so many people volunteering to do the job, you know, and they might not at all be qualified. But okay, he did discontinue his work with the group, I think, in 1946 or so, and occasionally wrote a letter up until 1949, but said, "Look, you've got enough to keep you going for the rest of your life." And you know, if we were to look at it would be Dinah 2, and I don't know, maybe let's look at page 120. Okay. So stage one is before this. And it starts, where does it start? There are several meditations here. This is the stage one, and it's coming in on page 116. So this is the first meditation, and then he pretty well retains it and has you go through it quickly as he gives you stage two of the meditation. It ends here with the mantra of unification, and then he moves on to stage two. And if I can see it, there it is on page 123. So page 116 and 123 are the places where these meditations are given. And he's telling, if you want to prepare for the second initiation, use meditation number one. And I suppose meditation number two is useful, or stage two of this meditation is useful. And he brings in the color of the soul and different chakras connected. Stage two is much more complex and complete, ending on page 125. So look those up and spend a little time with them, because they are useful for all of us. And in the Maurya Federation work, we do have these meditations for the benefit of the students. All right, so now the next is from about the illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. Right away, that signals the second initiation. It's the sign that man is ready for the second initiation. The spiritual instinct is related to the first initiation, and the illumined mind and spiritual intelligence to the second, and then intuitive instinct is related to the third degree. Obviously, we're at the third degree, we're interested in preparing for release onto the Buddhic plane. It happens at the fourth degree, but we have Antikarana pretty well built up to the monastic permanent atom, and higher mind is becoming intuition. Higher manas is becoming buddhi, and that is preparation for the fourth degree. So there's a lot of information and understanding that comes in that period following the third degree. So initiation is never taken unless the intuition is becoming active. Now, okay, even at the first degree, the monad makes its contact with the soul, even though the brain of the man doesn't recognize this. And we have to realize that the monad is an intuitive placement. It's on the second subplane of the cosmic physical plane, and that number two is related to intuition. So the intuition is becoming increasingly active, certainly at the second degree, when the sign Sagittarius, one of the intuitive signs, becomes very important with its ruler, Jupiter. Spiritual instinct, the lowest aspect of the intuition, that's interesting, indicates readiness for the first initiation. An illumined mind and spiritual intelligence are the definite sign that a man can take the second initiation, whilst spiritual perception or intuitive instinct signifies preparedness for the transfiguration, the third initiation. So this is really one of the important references. And you can ask yourself, where do I stand with respect to this? Now, a lot of students of Master DK are preparing for the second initiation, whether in this life or, you know, immediately following, within the next few lives, let us say. They study hard and they have, they're illumining their mind through Venus, and especially, and Mercury to a degree, and spiritual intelligence. They begin to see the correlations in the spiritual worlds, and the throat center is becoming active, importantly active. There's a lot of transference from sacral center to the throat at the first degree and also at the second degree. And later, some kind of point of view that involves being able to receive or center within the causal body will give us spiritual perception. And we begin to reach towards the true intuition, which will be more fully unfolded at the third degree. And the monad itself is a source of great intuition, and there's a more direct connection at the fourth degree with the monad. It's unimpeded, and the causal body is not in the way, which is interesting because we strive towards the use of the causal body and its various high qualities, but still they are transpersonal. They're worked up from below, and they're not part of the planetary logos' perception within the spiritual triad. All right, now, what do we have next? We're talking about presenting groups to the one initiator. This is still Discipleship in the New Age, and page 336. We hope, the masters, during the next 500 years, so this is written in the 30s of 1930s and so forth, so that takes us all the way to 24, 30, 24, 50, whatever, takes us into the 25th century, to present several such groups to the one initiator. We're talking about group initiation here, not just the presentation of the disciples one by one. We're told if the time-space schedule of the planetary logos is to be fulfilled, then group initiation is a must. And so he tries to begin to teach us about this. All who are in these groups have taken the first initiation out. DK is talking perhaps about his own little group, and there was only, well, one of his groups, at least the one associated with Alice Bailey, who knows what others there may have been. Only one individual had failed to stand before the Christ, so he was not an initiate of the first degree yet, but all the others were. So all who are in these groups have taken the first initiation, as have so many thousands of people in the world today. And so there he's talking about thousands, and in other references, I think millions are referenced, and either presently or coming. Many have taken the second initiation, particularly those who are working in fifth-ray ashrams and third-ray ashrams, for such disciples are distinguished by the lack of emotional emphasis. And I guess we might say it is the emotional emphasis which makes taking the second initiation difficult for those upon the 2, 4, 6 line. And apparently, he is leaving out as well the first and the seventh rays. So he's focusing on the specifically mental rays, which find an easier time to control the astral body. And basically, he's talking about souls, third ray souls, fifth ray souls. So maybe we can say third and fifth ray souls have the easiest time taking the second initiation. Now, what's it like for them to take the third? Well, there are some indications that the fifth ray is so very necessary in the third initiation. The Ajna Center in the fifth ray, and after all, it is the third initiation, so the idea of the third ray soul correlates. But can they develop that unitive state of mind, which really begins to see the One, to appreciate the One, and not to be overcome by illusion? Because maybe the third and the fifth ray types are particularly subject to illusion, although maybe the third ray type from the philosophical angle works very much on overcoming the illusion of time and space. So they have their plans, the masters, and they know what they want to do, and they are, you know, they think in terms of centuries. And here he's thinking in terms of five centuries, and yet he's starting it now, planning ahead now. And those who are involved in his groups will reap the benefit of his planning, even though at first it may seem that they have failed in terms of the intentions which DK had for the present moment, and there are other groups as well. So the process of presentation of groups for the sake of the very necessary group initiation is already occurring. And we can think of that in terms of our own groups and how we are affiliated. Are we learning to stand on the periphery of the ashram subject to, let's say, Master DK's instruction? Or are we still too fragmented in our personal self? Do we really think of the work that we can do together? I'm thinking about the Moria Federation at the moment, and the faculty and administration who are working together to help the students who are up and coming. And, you know, is this such a group that's standing on the periphery of Master DK's ashram, and thus included to a degree within Master KH's ashram, he being so involved generally in education? So many things are hidden from us, and good plans and designs are in process. And we have to, what would we say, serve and obey. He says it's not very interesting. And if he were to give us some kind of breathing exercise, which promised great things, we would practice it with assiduousness. But if we're told to serve and obey, which is really the royal road, we don't think it's very interesting. But I guess after a while, the lesser motives clear away, and we're willing to do the humble thing, which interestingly is also the faster, speedier, more effective thing to do. Now, here it is, will, law, and sacrifice on the second degree. The will is an expression of the law of sacrifice. When the will is exerted, there is always the giving up of the lesser for the greater, even though it seems like we're giving up the greater for the lesser. So, you know, he has here, Dina 2, page 336, he has all the different initiations summarized in this way. It involves the astral plane, and it relates to the second initiation. It does concern the heart center and the advancing point of light, which I assume that point of light has, in a way, entered the stream and is being borne along by ashramic tendency. Let's take a look here at Dina 2, page 336, and you'll see, I think we may have a problem here. Maybe the page is wrong. Advancing point of light. Advancing point of light. Take a look here. Advancing point of light. Okay. And here it is. It's page 339. 369. So, indeed, there was an incorrect, at least for this reference. indirect pagination, but we see, you know, he's talking about the different initiations. Energy follows thought, and the eye directs the energy. These are points of revelation. And then we learn this point of revelation in relation to the second initiation, and we become the advancing point of light, hopefully steadily advancing and not waxing and waning, advancing and retreating. And then the monad is to the planetary logos what the third eye is to man. All of these points of revelation involving the different levels of the cosmic physical plane. This one involves the mental plane, relates to the third initiation, and concerns the head center, and we become introduced to the light of purpose, which is a high monadic factor. And purpose itself is only an energy released within the confines of the council chamber. There it must take shape. So now we're into the fourth degree and the Buddhic plane. Relates to the fourth initiation, concerns the throat center and light upon the path. And I assume this path is the Antikarana to a degree, which continues, well, really continues and continues. And then this amazing one, when the light of the seven rays is blended with that of the seventh ray, obviously of a higher order than the seven which it blends, then light supernal can be known. And we begin to have that light supernal at the third degree, but it really breaks forth in revelation at the fifth degree. This involves the atmic plane, relates to the fifth and sixth initiations, and concerns, interestingly, the alta major center and apparently minor center, but bringing in extra planetary light. And already at the fifth degree, we begin to set our sights upon the possible path we may take on the way of higher evolution, and those paths, of course, are extra planetary. I think I've, you know, somehow offered some discussion of all of these things, but maybe not enough video discussion. I'd like to do that. So anyway, that's the page 369 and 370, where these points of revelation are discussed, and we have quite a curriculum there with the, is it seven hints and the, I don't know, five or six points of revelation, and we have the six formulas or maybe seven formulas. DK has told us that in Dyna 2 we really do have an initiatory manual, preliminary, of course. So his work is profound, and some people say, oh, well, that was written back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, so now let's look at all the new stuff. But when you're given the classics of occultism, they're good for centuries, thousands of years, and so forth, and you don't want to simply look for novelty, which is specious, which is untrue, filled with glamour and illusion, and just because it's a little bit newer, we assume that it has more utility, but it doesn't. So confirm your understanding of the occult classics, the secret doctrine, and the material given by DK, and what's coming up in the third installment. These are the things you can rely upon in this sea of glamorous, illusory misinformation. Okay, now let's go on a little more. The energy emanating from Shambhala in the second initiation, and we just looked at that point of revelation, right? It's of, second point of revelation is of peculiar interest. It concerns the first contact of the initiated disciple, probationarily initiated, with the energy emanating from Shambhala and transmitted to him via the master of the ashram with which he is at any time associated. So even at the period of the second degree, we already have shambolic energy entering, we have the will entering, we have identification entering, we have some interest in and knowledge of Sanat Kumara entering. It may be much more confirmed with monadic contact at the third degree, but even at the second, it's already building. He has not yet reached the stage wherein direct contact is permitted with Shambhala, certainly, and even with the monad. But the contact with the monad is, in a sense, contact with Shambhala, but still needs the ashramic protection which the master provides. It's a bit like a causal body, isn't it? The ashram is a protective mechanism, and only at a certain stage are we free of that protective ashram and maybe free as a master to form our own ashram, unless we're on the scientific lines, I think. Fourth degree individuals in those ashrams, 3 and 5, can form their own ashram on the higher mental plane. At the indicated second initiation, he receives a quality of stimulation which enables him to see the astral plane as it essentially is. Now, what will this mean? Think of it. This will mean the overcoming to a great extent of glamour, because we don't see it as it is, and we glorify it, and we think a great extent. That, I mean, I think that's the way you spell that word. Okay, of glamour. And with this revelation comes also the recognition of the basic necessity to make it holy, not a fragmented, divisive area, but to harmonize it, unify it, to render whole that which provides the most disturbing Martian element in the existence of mankind. When you see a word like disturbing, it's whoopsie. Well, let's just see here. So, right. When we, as I say, when we see the word disturbing, we think of Mars. And it is the non-sacred planet, and it's certainly ruling the astral body and the physical body, dense physical body, and the lower mind and the personality as a whole. Notice that the higher mind is left out of it, and notice that the etheric body, which is responsive to the higher mental plane, is left out of the rulership of Mars. So these are things that can happen. Clear sight, Venus will give that to us. Jupiter also is a planet of vision. Neptune is a planet of confused vision, but later it becomes a planet of pure reason. So we do, again, see intuitively things as they are. So we have to lift the veil and not be misled by the usual condition of the astral plane. So really, the second initiation, really, you know, as I said, with its 6 and 2 nature, has contact with the monad with its 2 and 6 nature, but not so much conscious contact with Shambhala. The ashram is still protecting, just the way the causal body protects. The causal body protects from direct contact with the monad, which happens at the fourth degree, and maybe at the fourth degree or a little beyond, one can move out of the protective influence of the ashram in which one has been raised, so to speak, spiritually raised, and form his own ashram. There's so much here. We just have to steep ourselves in it and let the relationships between things adjust themselves properly and begin to see the divine pattern in the lower worlds as best we can. It exists in the higher worlds, and the question is, can we see it in the lower worlds? That takes some doing and some meditative contact with the true sources in the higher worlds. Will and initiations. We continue in Dina 2, the use of the will aspect in making holy or setting apart is active not only at the second initiation, but in all of them. And in a peculiar sense, at the sixth initiation of decision. Well, the 2 and the 6 are very related, you know, and we're told we don't really even have sort of not just mental focus, but mental polarization until midway between the second and third initiation. And he discusses that when he's discussing the sixth initiation. So always watch out for numerical affinity. The will reveal the divine pattern, the divine purpose. And we have to set the different areas apart so they can truly respond to the archetype and not just be involved in the confusing mixture of energies which make it impossible really to serve the divine plan. The will is separative, it's unitive and separative, and it extracts from sort of a messy, confusing situation that which has to be specifically concentrated upon in order to raise its quality. So we're pretty much run by the astral body until the second initiation comes along and stabilizes the influence of the higher planets within it and brings in the quality of true love and the love of our fellow human beings. So all of the turmoil of the astral body is brought into a condition of greater stability when we take the second degree. Now, right before the second degree, there's all kinds of terrible emotional tests and extremely exaggerated emotions. As DK tells one of his disciples, ISGL, who is scheduled to take that initiation, didn't, but he was scheduled to. He says, well, your reactions are, he didn't say over the top, but you know what I mean. They were extreme. And it was because he was dealing with the emotions that appear with intensity before the taking of the second initiation, before the tranquilizing of the astral body comes about, so that one can truly think in the light of the soul. So often we have emotions getting in the way of true thinking, you know, the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life and so forth. So we just have to learn a phrase which has been associated with the Christ, calmness, forever unperturbed. Now, as a fourth-rate type myself, I shouldn't be talking about that because I don't think I've ever achieved that. But, you know, we have to find a way to allow the higher mind and the intuition to speak, because the calmness of the astral body is perpetually present, not just on good days. Okay. Well, okay. So there's more here. But I think that this will be the time to, let's just say this is the end of second initiation, compilation, a number, a program two. And it's still the 14th of June. I don't know how long I'll be able to go on with this, but we'll see. And this is the beginning of second initiation compilation, program number three. And I don't know the date at which this will occur. It depends on other more mundane demands. But it's so good to be able to somehow see these references topically related. I mean, yes, we're missing something. We're missing that kind of continuity that comes from following the horizontal writing, and maybe we're missing some contextual things, but new ideas can be stimulated, and we get an idea of how really important this second degree is. He tells us that once we take the second degree, progress will be very rapid, with the third and fourth degree probably following in the same life, if we can believe that, or in the next. So this entering of the stream, this being borne along by the energy of the ashram, this entering of divine will as a factor in the whole push of the monad really speeds things upon the way. And it takes a long time to move generally from the first to the second degree. Maybe there are some exceptions, but by the time we reach the second degree, we're in that tunnel or funnel where everything goes through a narrow area and thus speeds up. So, you know, are we ready for that? And you know, of course, being ready for it is not a question of just earnestly desiring it more than we desire to serve our fellow human beings. So we have to keep our priorities straight. Love and service come first. And then that's almost an automatic preparation, maybe even more than meditation, for the taking of the various degrees. We do live on a second-ray soul planet, and we live on a within a second-ray solar system, and so love is the key. Okay, friends, I think that's going to be it for now. We'll see if we get on to anything else, and meanwhile, see you later.